You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to an emergency episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And much like DC leading up to the inauguration, the Seahawks live now in a constant state of emergency, requiring us to constantly do podcasts after two consecutive days of talking about the Seahawks, wrapping up the 2020 season. More stunning news on Tuesday as the Seahawks have fired offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer after 3 years with the team.
And they tried to stop me from podcasting. They cut my power. And I said, you cannot hold me back from emergency podcasting about the Seahawks every single day. 365 emergency podcasts about the Seahawks. Let's go.
We are always on call. So the Seahawks news or release about this citing philosophical differences. And my ESPN colleague, Adam Schefter, reported that a meeting on Monday night between Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll, after Carroll had said during his media availability on Monday that he expected the coaching staff to be back, revealed those philosophical differences, and they agreed to a mutual parting of ways, which,
wow,
it's amazing how often these are mutual.
When I think that philosophical differences is really what we're going to be paying attention to here, because it's the most important piece of this conversation, more so than even Brian Schottenheimer coming back. It is, as we talked about yesterday, what is this philosophy that Pete Carroll does not see eye to eye with Brian Schottenheimer on? And I think we have a pretty good understanding of what it is, and I think it's bad. But there was also the news. Did this come out today, or did we just emphasize it today? Of the 4th-and-1 play that happened in the game against the Rams, where the Seahawks ended up, the clock was running out, and they ended up getting a false start and punting. And on that play, saying that Pete Carroll basically overruled Brian Schottenheimer on the play call, and Shoddy had, I mean, that's fighting words right there. You know, that's escalating a situation. So I'm not shocked after seeing that we came to this place on both sides. You know, if you have Pete who's saying, no, this is the wrong play call. And if you have Shoddy who's put in what he thought was his best play call for 4th-and-1, he'd saved this play all season to be unleashed on this 4th-and-1. And Pete coming in and saying, no, that's wrong. That is a philosophical difference that we see right there. And then they ended up doing fuck all nothing and punting, like the whole thing. I would have been curious to have seen one of the plays, but because of that, and because of what Pete did by overruling Shoddy, not only did we not get to see the play that Shoddy had called, we didn't get to see the play that Pete called because of this process taking time to overrule him. And it meant that the Seahawks punted the ball. Like, if you could pinpoint one moment in that entire game that cost the Seahawks the game, it probably wouldn't be that one. It'd be the pick six. But yeah. But if you could pinpoint one of the top five moments that lost the Seahawks the game, I think that you would come to that fourth down false start that led to a punt. And you can look at it pretty clearly and see that Pete Carroll, by doing this, cost the Seahawks a playoff win by overruling Shoddy.
I mean, I don't think it's even about whether it cost them a win or not. It's emblematic of the problems with the process, both in terms of being okay with punting in that scenario and in terms of some sort of disconnect between the head coach and offensive coordinator. So yes, this was from Carroll's availability on Monday. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest tweeted, Pete Carroll said that he was, quote, fighting the call on the 4th-and-1 that resulted.
Fighting the call, right? Those are aggressive words.
That, I guess that was actually from the Pete Carroll show, I should say, not from the availability.
I mean, that does not sound like a coach who plans on bringing their offensive coordinator back, you know.
But he still said that during that same interview, which is kind of the perplexing part of this. And yeah, I mean, if this, to go back to what you said at the start of this about the philosophical differences, if this had just been the Seahawks moving on from Brian Schottenheimer after a playoff loss where Russell Wilson played one of the five worst games of his career, then despite how awesome this offense was in the first half of the season, like you could feel encouraged about that because we obviously had a lot of quotes with Brian Schottenheimer that we talked about on the last 2 days worth of podcast, which you should listen to if you haven't already. But it doesn't sound like those are the qualms that Pete Carroll had. It seems like Pete Carroll's qualm was that Shoddy wanted to pass the ball too much. I don't even know, man. Like, it's the Seahawks' self-parody.
It's bleak. It is bleak. And everything that we said about Pete Carroll yesterday, you can just control C, control V, right? Like, there's nothing changed. It's somehow even worse, though. And the fact that we looked at this and this whole season, despite the fact that they were playing the best offense, maybe in Seahawks history for a half of the season, and that Pete Carroll saw that as an issue. And they were winning while doing it. That's the other piece, is they weren't losing games while they were playing some of the best offense in Seahawks history and beating good teams. Pete Carroll saw that as a problem. That is a philosophical difference that he not only has with Brian Schottenheimer, that's a philosophical difference with understanding how to win football games. And everybody in the organization should have that same philosophical difference with Pete Carroll. And the fact that there are people who are out there defending this is shocking to me, because there's no way that you could look at this conversation, that quote in particular. Moving on from Shoddy is one thing. All of a sudden, Pete gave Shoddy an out, though, right? Like, Shoddy looks like the good guy here all of a sudden. We're like, damn, we're going to be talking about in 4 years, we're going to be on a podcast, Shoddy's going to have like a pretty good offense with the Atlanta Falcons. And we're going to be like, right now, would you rather have Brian Schottenheimer or Pete Carroll? And you're gonna be like, Shoddy. He's the hero now, right? Gone too soon. Think about the way that we think about Daryl Bevel. It's just like, man, Daryl Bevel. That's an offensive coordinator that won a Super Bowl, right? That's the way that we're going to think about Brian Schottenheimer. What he wants as an offensive coordinator will forever be weeks 1 through 8 of the 2020 season. And that is a beautiful thing to think about.
I mean, we liked Bevel through his firing, so I don't think it's only a retroactive retcon in thing here. With some members of Seahawks Twitter, perhaps that is the case. I guess he died a hero rather than living long enough to see himself become the villain. So
it's pretty hilarious, but that's the piece where, let's say that it's going to be, let's just be honest here. It's going to be a rocky offseason for the Seahawks. And
no, not for the Seahawks. It's going to be a rocky offseason for us,
for Seahawks Twitter. But would you be shocked if you heard that there was tension between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson in a month?
No.
And that's it. Most important of anything else, you keep Russell Wilson happy. More important than your 69-year-old head coach. More important than anybody else in the program, you keep Russell Wilson happy. But I think the thing that we have seen consistently throughout this year is institutions of power always win. And they will always carry on. And Pete Carroll in this moment is part of the institution of power. Pete Carroll's job is not on the line here, right? I would be shocked if Pete Carroll was let go after next season, after the season after that, maybe ever, right? It would take some very consistent losing for Pete Carroll's job to be on the line. There, the chances of Russell Wilson leaving the Seahawks before Pete Carroll increased so dramatically today that it's now something we have to think about. And I think that Russell Wilson probably agrees. Obviously, just guessing here, he is a quarterback who likes to pass the ball. This is not a Brock Heward type situation. Russell Wilson probably agrees a lot more with Brian Schottenheimer's philosophy than he does with Pete Carroll's. And Pete Carroll's philosophy that led to him having one of his worst games ever in a playoff game against the Rams.
Somehow you made this even bleaker than I anticipated it being, because I really wasn't going to get into the Russell Wilson piece of it at all. I know.
It's all that matters. Brian Schottenheimer doesn't matter, right? Like, Brian Schottenheimer he's a lost soldier in the war, right? In the war of running good offense.
Jeez.
But we talked about this on the season recap podcast. This is a fundamental disconnect between Pete Carroll and how offense works in the year 2020. And look, if he didn't have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, run whatever the fuck offense you want. You know, like you would still probably want them to maximize value and opportunity on offense. But when you have Russell Wilson in his prime, you use Russell Wilson in his prime. This is like having a sports car and keeping it locked up in the garage, you know?
So you're saying that Pete Carroll is not Ferris Bueller. He's Cameron's dad.
Cameron's dad. Yes.
Yes. Wow. What a timely reference. I mean, well, the Seahawks are going to hire a replacement offensive coordinator. I'm pretty sure that Pete Carroll will not just take over the duties himself. Mike Garofalo of NFL Network mentioned Chargers offensive coordinator Shane Steichen is a possible candidate. Steichen replaced Ken Wisenhunt on an interim basis midway through the 2019 season before retaining the job full-time last season and was credited, of course, you'll never imagine it, with increasing the Chargers' focus on the run game after taking over. Some other current offensive coordinators who may be looking for work because their teams have changed head coaches, Dirk Cutter in Atlanta. Our old friend Daryl Bevel, who has interviewed for the head coaching job in Detroit. We'll see if he gets that. But if they bring back Daryl Bevel, I don't know. I might feel way better about the whole situation. Tim Kelly in Houston, who also interviewed for that head coaching job. Jay Gruden in Jacksonville and Dowell Loggins of the Jets. A couple of quarterback coaches you'd naturally look at, but will probably be internally promoted because their offensive coordinators are head coaching candidates. Ken Dorsey. Yes, that Ken Dorsey in Buffalo under Brian Daboll, and then Mike Kafka in Kansas City under Eric Bieniemy. And a couple of intriguing promotion candidates that I found looking through all of the coaching staffs in the league. Look, if you say that the way to fix an offense with a quarterback who has not performed up to his usual standards for some period of time is to bring in a LaFleur, then I've got the candidate for you.
Oh, I'm going to love this.
Mike LaFleur, San Francisco's passing game coordinator, who is Matt's younger brother.
There we go.
But he's a Kyle Shanahan disciple who followed Shanahan from Cleveland to Atlanta, now to San Francisco, where Shanahan also serves as the 49ers offensive coordinator. So there's not really a promotion opportunity for LaFleur there. So that actually, I think, is an intriguing one to watch.
Does it check out, though, with Pete Carroll, right? Like, look, we accurately understood who Pete Carroll was at the end of the season. Do you think all of a sudden he's going to go out and say, oh, Mike Kafka's a young, hot offensive coordinator candidate. That's who I'm going to hire. No, Pete Carroll is going to hire a pedigreed, long-tenured old man for this position.
Well, he hasn't necessarily always done that. I mean, when he brought Jeremy Bates with him from USC, I think it was Bates's first time as an offensive coordinator in the NFL. So that was an example of him not hiring, you know, an established OC like he did the last few times with Bevel and Schottenheimer. I think there's a difference between, you know, when you look at the hot, like the Chiefs coaching tree, where that's built on passing a lot. I don't know if that appeals to Pete Carroll as much as the Shanahan tree might, in terms of, you know, they've had zone blocking schemes at times offensively in the Carroll era. They, you know, haven't necessarily used a lot of the bootleg that's a big part of the Shanahan and the Kubiak offense.
Pre-snap motion. If that is something, if Pete Carroll all of a sudden was like, I want to run the ball more, but I'm going to use tons of pre-snap motion. We're going to have a lot of end arounds, reverses, things like that. This would be a completely different coach than we have seen.
I think that's plausible because, again, the focus of the Shanahan offense is still on running the ball and the Kubiak offense. It's just that the passing game and the play action is then built off of that. And I think that Carroll could be compatible with that. I mean, I'm not saying like the odds that he's going to hire any one quarterback coach or passing game coordinator are probably pretty low, but
it's more a philosophical question though. I just don't, again, nothing in Pete Carroll's tenure in Seattle has led us to believe that that is something that he's interested in.
I don't know if we can pin it down as much as I think you are, but I mean, we're going to find out a lot about what Pete values in a different way, because we found out something in hiring Schottenheimer that, you know, Schottenheimer's reputation was someone who ran the ball a lot. So if he hired someone who ran the ball a lot and he still didn't get along philosophically, I just don't know who he's going to find that is going to be more aligned with that. Like, I don't get it.
He needs to hire Pete Carroll.
Oh no.
How many children is he has a child leaving the staff this year? Where's Nate Carroll?
Yeah, has not been. I mean, you know, I don't think he's And in Austin Davis, I considered mentioning, but I think with only 1 year of quarterback coach experience, it's probably too big of a jump for Austin Davis too soon. At age 31, by the way, so many of these candidates are younger than I am. And that is very, very troubling.
We watched play football not that long ago.
The other quarterback coach I thought of as a possibility would be Joe Lombardi from the Saints, who has been number one rushing offense in the league this year, has been in that position for several years. Another situation where, you know, not likely to have the offensive coordinator hired out. So, you know, might be looking elsewhere for a promotion. That would be the other quarterback coach I would look at.
And there are ways to run the ball effectively and often while also not just having your offense line up like it was the Revolutionary War and plow into the defense. You know, there are certainly ways that with those things you're talking about, like if they ran the ball like the Saints run the ball, if they ran the ball like the 49ers ran the ball, that's one thing. But again, nothing about Pete Carroll's tenure tells me that this is something that he's interested in. He's looking for a person not who's going to add more variety to the offense. I think he's looking for a person who's literally just going to pound the rock more, right? There has to be a philosophy around it a bit, I suppose. But if somebody comes in, I could tell them what the hot button terms are, right? If you're interviewing for the job of Seattle Seahawks coach and I'm advising you beforehand, you're Shane Steichen. You need to say, we need to run the ball to set up play action and to get the defense out of what they want to play against us. We need to get them out of cover two by running the ball. And we need to run the ball effectively and often to do that and set up the big play.
You're going to advise these coaches to read Pete Carroll's comments from Monday.
Yes.
I feel like their agents could probably handle that. I don't think they needed you for that one.
Wow. But that's what Pete Carroll wants to hear. He doesn't want to hear, we're going to have a bunch of pre-snap motion. He doesn't want to hear anything like that. He wants to hear that they are going to run the ball a lot and effectively. That's what happened with Brian Schottenheimer. He was a coach who was known to run the ball. And when he got here, he was like, oh shit, we're really good at passing. We should do that more, right? And any effective coach or offensive coordinator is going to be intrigued by doing the best offense in the NFL.
You might note, as 30-Acre Fortress did on Twitter, quote tweeting Mike Sando's look at the Seahawks' early down pass rate over the last 20 years here, that every time they have been fired an offensive coordinator, it has come after they were above average in terms of early down passes the previous season.
Oh, my God.
So that kind of speaks for itself. Now, you might also wonder, it's 2021, we're committed to diversity. What about black candidates? Now, unfortunately, there are not a lot of black quarterback coaches in the NFL. In fact, there were only two of them last season, Marcus Brady for the Colts and Pep Hamilton, the longtime Stanford and previous Colts offensive coordinator with the Chargers under Steichen. Those were the only two in the NFL this season.
Well, and that's kind of the problem, right? I mean, that's the conversation that we were having, is that those coaches aren't existing throughout the coaching tree. So, you know, Pete Carroll could be bold and promote somebody who maybe doesn't have that kind of experience and start fixing some problems that exist within coaching and giving some coaches who haven't been, you know, who aren't the, don't have the last name of an NFL legend or whatever, you know, giving opportunities to somebody like that.
I mean,
somebody new.
Technically, Marcus Brady does have the last name of an NFL legend. Well, you know, if the Seahawks do hire an offensive coordinator within the next few days, we'll be ready.
Emergency pod.
Hopefully your power won't be cut. We'll be on top of it. I mean, we don't go anywhere anymore, so we'll be available. So look out for that. And if you haven't already, of course, please check out the Seahawks season in review with Third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin, which is still 99% fresh, despite the 1% tucky on shoddy.
Before we leave, do you have any stats on Shane Steichen? Can we get a sense of how the Chargers offense did under, just knowing that he's a candidate who has been talked about publicly more so than basically any other candidate? How was the Chargers offense under Shane Steichen overall, not just percentage of run?
I mean, the interesting thing is last season when he held that job full time, they were, you know, much better in terms of passing the ball with a rookie quarterback, Justin Herbert, which they I mean, they did awesome for having a rookie quarterback that we were very skeptical of in Justin Herbert, but they were seventh in pass DVOA last season, and they were 31st in the NFL in rush DVOA. So I don't know what to tell you on that one, despite Justin Herbert being pretty good at rushing the ball himself. And who knows how serious that, you know, candidacy is, whether that's just a logical name or if it's actually some specific reporting that there's interest there.
Okay. Well, we've definitely seen that before, where a coach is known for running the ball often and is not actually good at running the ball and is good at passing the ball.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of anything like that. I guess actually Justin Herbert was not good at running the ball. Come to look at it. He was below replacement in terms of DR running it. So he was part of the problem, not part of the solution. I take that back. Anyways, like I was saying, be sure to check out that 2020 season recap with Ben Baldwin. Just ignore all the parts where we talk about Shoddy. And then, or maybe do pay attention to the parts where we talk about the issues with his scheme and how much of a factor that was in the Seahawks downturn in the second half of the season. And then also this week's regular pod, where we go over in full depth Pete Carroll's comments from his press conference and media availability on Monday.
And ended a nihilist conclusion.
Oh, I gotta admit, I had forgotten the nihilist conclusion until the fabulatorious Felton quotes brought it back. So that was good to know.
That Twitter page is when I learned what you've included in the episode that I assume has been deleted the day before.
Be sure to check that out, Felton Quotes on Twitter. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.